Commentary number 9 of the story, Mixed Behavior. This story presents several different aspects, all of which are important, valuable to consider. Not only that of a person's approach to a teaching or transmission, but more so, for our purposes here, from the perspective of what the real worker can do and is doing, and some of this person's attitudes and perceptions and purposes behind and through the work that he's doing. The first thing to consider is direct relationship to another, and that is a person who really knows what they're doing and has the tools and ability to convey what is needed at the moment will act in the manner that's needed, not in a manner that is perceived to be needed. So a person who needs to be meek or humble will act in that manner. If a person needs to be overblown and offensive, he or she will act in that manner. And the freedom to act comes from non-attachment to oneself, non-attachment to the teachings or mores of society, not attached to how a particular person is supposed to look or act. And in addition to that, the person has to have the skills and abilities to act in various manners. And these can be gained in lots of different ways and many times through practices and many times also through the experience of life, which will unfold and allow a person to act in different ways if they're able to attune to it. Then what happens is when they're in that situation, they can freely act and do. Now, this non-attachment gives the person to act in any capacity, and this includes, in this case, in an exaggerated manner. Now, the reason for this person acting, or one of the reasons for the person acting this way, the teacher, the guide, the worker, more to the point, is that it gives people an opportunity to become aware of how they are affected and how they themselves are led and turned by the appearance or actions of other people, rather than basing their actions on reality. Now, if they don't learn that, then they don't learn it, but at least it gives them the opportunity to directly perceive it and gain from the experience of being uneasy, for example, to somebody's actions, especially when the person is doing it very deliberately. Now, while this is worthy in and of itself to help another person in this way, it may be that only a very, very small percentage of the people who one comes into contact with will actually perceive this, will actually be able to learn from this. Now, in the particular case of this story, here's an individual who had gone one step beyond the immediate reaction and made certain assumptions in terms of why the individual teacher, guide, worker was doing what he was doing, and felt enough to question the person directly, and was given the above answer. But then the person goes further, the questioner goes further and says, but how many people will actually learn from this? How many people will actually know this? I understand what you're saying, and hopefully he would be able to tune his behavior and perception accordingly. And the answer to this is that we're doing work on lots and lots of different levels. We're not only working to assist somebody today, to assist somebody who's directly in our presence, but also other people who are further away, and also other times We're also working to preserve awareness, preserve knowledge, preserve experiences so that they can be carried forward and applied, used by other people. And in this manner, the teaching is preserved and carried on. How important is this? The example given is that if a person loses their own life and isn't able to preserve something which he or she knows is going to be valuable and essential in the future, then they really haven't saved anything if it's at the cost of not preserving the real teaching. The life is something that is extraordinarily transient. As is the teaching, it can come back in many other forms. But to preserve that becomes the foremost work of the one who's acting as the transmitter of the way. This is the end of this commentary.